live from Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, with occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Pat Brady, Democrat William Delgado, Independent Chris Broyles, and special guests Tom Skinner of the Center for Disease Control and John Dye of the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Disease. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the XM Sirius Studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btb@museum.tv. Today, in a very rare Sunday press conference in Washington, the public health emergency was issued for the United States by Janet Napolitano, who's the head of Homeland Security, and it was quite an impressive press conference. It comes in the wake of a reported 20 cases of swine flu in the United States. And looking at a map of the United States, you will see that 7 of those are in the state of California, 2 in Kansas, 2 in Texas, 1 in Ohio, and 8 in New York State, primarily in New York City. This follows a reported 1,300 cases or suspected cases in Mexico and 81 deaths since April 12th. This is a major health concern, and joining us now from the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, is Tom Skinner. Tom, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Let us begin by alerting the audience. What are the symptoms of swine flu that people should be looking for?
Well, this particular type of influenza is similar to other types of influenza in that people who come down with it develop fever. They may have a cough, a sore throat. They may have muscle aches. We're also seeing, though, some nausea and vomiting and diarrhea associated with this influenza, which is a little bit on the unusual side, but this typically mimics, you know, the ordinary flu. And thankfully, so far, all the individuals in the U.S. that have gotten this have recovered on their own. But we only have, you know, 20 or so cases that we're reporting. That's not a lot of cases to really tell us what the clinical picture looks like. And as we see more cases, we're certainly expecting to possibly see some severe cases. And as we go along, we may, in fact, even see some, unfortunately, see some deaths associated with this. It's early on in the course of our investigation, and we're uncovering more and more cases as we go along.
We should also mention or ask, if are there any common denominators that have been discovered thus far, albeit the number is small, but I mean, and so far as age, gender, and we certainly know that no region has been dominating.
No, we've seen young and old, male and female, get this. The age range of the cases so far here in the United States is anywhere from as young as age 7 up to age 54. And again, we're only talking about a relatively small number of cases. So we're not seeing any unusual patterns right now in regards to age or gender of the cases that we've seen so far.
And the fact that the Secretary of Homeland Security is the public face of this, obviously working with your boss at the Center for Disease Control. But is there anything that should be read into that as opposed to the HHS Secretary?
No, I think that the Homeland Security gets involved with any situation that they deem a threat to our country, whether it be from a natural disaster, from a terrorist event, or even in this case, a health event. So it's not unusual, and we're definitely working side by side with our Department of Homeland Security to address the situation.
Now, obviously, in any case like this, communication among scientists around the United States and around the world becomes very important. There was a report yesterday in the Washington Post, however, that suggested that the speed with which the United States learned of the problems in Mexico was not very ideal. In fact, Canadian officials learned about it faster than CDC. How come?
Well, I tell you what, speed is of the essence, and we always can do a better job when it comes to detecting and responding. You know, why and how this unfolded is something that we're going to be looking into as we move forward to see what, if anything, we can do better the next time around to respond sooner. But we're certainly on top of this situation, and all of our efforts right now are going to try and minimize the impact that this has on public health.
Now, we should mention that, obviously, if you're a doctor listening to the broadcast this evening, or you're a hospital administrator or work in an ER room, you know that hospitals have procedures in place when anything looks suspect. But can you explain to the audience, Tom, basically what the procedure is for those in the healthcare field so that information funnels up to you in Atlanta?
Yeah, there are guidelines posted on the CDC website for, you know, clinicians that are possibly seeing patients, and depending on, you know, travel histories that are taken, there are certain measures that healthcare workers that are treating patients can take. Certainly, if they know somebody is infected, there are different types of, you know, respirators and masks that healthcare workers can take to protect themselves. Obviously, hand hygiene is very, very important, and making sure that you know, wash your hands in between seeing patients. So there are definitely steps that healthcare workers can take to protect themselves, and we have those guidelines posted on our website at cdc.gov, and we're going to continue to monitor this, and as new information becomes available for, you know, healthcare workers and the public alike, we'll make sure to pass that along.
You mentioned that in the 20 reported cases in the United States, there wasn't any unique common denominator. Can anything be gleaned from the 80 deaths reported or the 1,300 cases reported in Mexico thus far?
I think it's, you know, really early in the course of this. We've only been after this now for about a week or so, so there's still a lot that we have to learn. Why is it seem to be impacting people in Mexico more so than here in the United States? And there are just answers to questions that we need to glean that we don't have right now, and that's certainly one of them.
And again, the ability of the scientific community to share information, how does that information flow to you, or is most of the flow at a time like this, is it from you to research science labs around the United States and perhaps around the world?
Well, I tell you what, the World Health Organization is doing an outstanding job of coordinating communication between, you know, countries around the world, because we really, as a world, we're in this together. You know, we're only as strong as our weakest link when it comes to preventing the spread of infectious diseases around the world. So it's imperative that countries talk, communicate, share specimens, exchange information with each other. And that's what we're doing. And so there are multiple ways in which we do that, you know, obviously conference calls and emails and telephone calls and communiques are, you know, being shared amongst governments around the world on a daily or a minute-by-minute basis, 24 hours a day.
Tom Skinner, I thank you very much for joining us tonight. Tom Skinner of the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, joining us as our first guest tonight on Beyond the Beltway. When we come back, we'll have one of the country's leading experts on immunology. From Bakersfield, California to Baltimore, Maryland, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway from coast to coast and border to border. Thank you very much for joining us. We're following this public health emergency issued this afternoon by Janet Napolitano, the head of Homeland Security. And joining us now is Dr. John Dye. He is with the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases. He's a virologist and immunologist, and he is somewhat of a scientific historian insofar as the way that epidemics and pandemics really have brought fear to many around the world for many, many years. And Dr. Dye, thank you very much for joining us this evening on Beyond the Beltway.
evening, Mr. Dumont. It's a pleasure to be with you.
What can you tell us generally about the disease that we know about that we're dealing with right now? What are some basics that we know based on the public awareness?
Well, so based on what I have read, what we're dealing with is a swine flu, which is a type A influenza that's caused by an orthomyxovirus. It regularly can occur in pigs and can be very detrimental to the swine farming and agriculture. However, it normally is not infectious to humans. But if it does jump to humans, which apparently it has in this case, there can be human-to-human spread, which is obviously what WHO and CDC are very, very worried about. Prior to this outbreak, in the last 4 years, there have only been 12 cases of swine flu recorded in the United States, and it's been isolated to 10 different states.
Now, once an individual has it, I mean, do they spread it to another human being by shaking their hands, by kissing, by other forms of personal and direct contact?
Yes. So the ways to spread this is mostly just the way you would spread a cold or you would spread the normal flu, which is sneezing and coughing, which is why the CDC has recommended washing your hands with soap and water to avoid contact with your face, because that's a very easy way to spread respiratory germs. And if you're going into infected areas and you feel sick, it's probably best to stay at home from work or from school so that you don't take a chance of infecting other people. What's important to note is there's been no scientific data that has actually shown that the swine flu can actually come from eating pork. So I had dinner tonight, and I had pork for dinner, and there's no reason why everyone should stop eating pork at this particular time.
Now, the first reported case in Mexico was on April 12th. It was a 39-year-old woman.
Yes.
There are now 1,300 reported cases and 81 deaths. Within the research, that you're aware of, I mean, is that an unusually fast movement to 81 deaths, or is it relatively slow, or how would you compare that with other epidemics or pandemics that you've examined?
Well, I would not my personal belief is I would not classify this as a pandemic at this time, and we can go into why I believe that to be true. I would just say this is an epidemic at this time that needs to be watched very, very carefully. With 1,400 reporting sick and 81 to 86 that have died at this point, that's about a 6% rate of death in New York, Kansas, California, and other states. And there have been no fatalities thus far reported in the United States. Now, we don't know if that 1,400 that have reported sick, that's not really going to encompass everyone who actually has come in contact with this flu. So therefore, that 6% is actually pretty high, I would say, at this point, and hopefully we'll see that number will come down in the near future.
For those who are listening to the broadcast this evening, how can they what is the difference between the swine flu that we're talking about now that has been mm-hmm. determined a public health emergency and the run-of-the-mill flu that perhaps we have all experienced once or twice in our lives?
Excellent question, Mr. Dumont. So pigs, just like humans and other animals, are all susceptible to influenza virus. When a pig becomes infected with the flu, it gets lethargic and has a fever and would probably lay around in bed if it could. And then that is normally passed on to human handlers. Pig farmers can actually become infected by the pig flu. Now, sometimes a pig can be infected by multiple flu viruses at the same time. A human virus, a bird flu, or another pig flu or other mammalian flus. And then there can be a mixing of the genetic information of those different flu viruses that can lead to a more infectious virus. And my guess is that is what is going on in this particular case. You have basically multiple viruses that are mixing within the pig or even within a human to cause this more infectious virus.
And insofar as those who are concerned about maybe trips that they have taken to Mexico, how quickly would this show up? I mean, if someone was on a vacation in Mexico last week, last month, I mean, is the incubation period passed for them?
Yes. So most people show symptoms when they become infected with influenza virus within the first 7 days. However, you may not realize that it is the flu because flu symptoms are very similar to common cold symptoms and other symptoms from other viral infections and also bacterial infections. So if you have been to Mexico, I would definitely suggest that you keep a close eye on yourself and your loved ones and other people that have traveled with you to and take them into the doctors if they are showing flu symptoms and have themselves checked out, because there are medications that, if given within the first several days of getting the flu virus, can be very, very effective, like Tamiflu and Relenza.
And, you know, one of the recommendations at this press conference today was, well, if you're not feeling real well tomorrow, stay home. I mean, is that mm-hmm. too much of a blanket CYA comment by the government, in your view?
Well, I would say that in a way, yes, but in a way, no. No, we don't have enough information. I think Dr. Skinner from the CDC, who you just had on, made a really good point. Right now, there is not enough information. The number of cases that we have reported, especially here in the U.S., there is not enough data to determine what the infectious nature of this particular epidemic is. So therefore, I would say that if you had flu-like symptoms, it's probably safest to stay at home all the time, because you don't want to infect your coworkers with any type of flu, whether it be the swine flu or the human flu.
And because we are in uncharted waters regarding this strain of flu, mm-hmm. am I correct that there is no vaccine out there? Should this thing start to grow, there is no stockpile of vaccine ready to try to remedy this problem?
That is correct. The flu has many, many different varieties. And for those people who actually get a flu vaccine, what they actually are getting are the best estimates of the CDC and the WHO of what the flu strains will be for that particular year. Now, those are all human flu strains. This actually was a swine flu, so therefore it's very unlikely that the human flu vaccine that was given this year will be effective. And there is no vaccine for this H1N1 swine flu that is presently running rampant in Mexico and maybe other places in other countries. However, there are companies at this time that are ramping up the production of this particular vaccine to this. I believe the CDC and the WHO will most likely give samples to industry, and I would think within 2 months you'll start to see production of vaccines for this particular strain.
So that would be the quickest. However, if we run into a situation where the number of cases in the United States has, let's say, doubled in the next month or so, or the number of cases in Mexico have doubled within the next month or so, we will be in a scientific panic situation?
I wouldn't say a scientific panic situation. I would say that it's going to be monitored very closely by WHO and CDC. And I believe with what President Obama has put forth, releasing funds, declaring the state of emergency for this particular infectious outbreak, I think that funds have been released and vaccine will be developed. And we may be a little behind the curve. However, we'll be doing the best we can in the scientific community to stay on top of this.
And the Washington Post yesterday had a story that the United States was slow to learn about this. The Mexican government reported it, I guess, to the UN on the 12th of April, and we didn't learn about it until much later, and we learned after the Canadians. Is that sort of standard operating procedure insofar as the slowness of the Mexican government in reporting things of this nature?
Right. I can't comment to that. However, I think something that Dr. Skinner said was very apropos. I think there will likely be more cases that are reported from around the globe. But what is important to note is the severity of these cases and the age demographics of those that are infected and that die. There needs to be a total disclosure of all information around the world to help us understand the severity of this infection. So global communication through the WHO is paramount for stemming this infectious disease.
When we spoke earlier in the day and you agreed to do this interview, you said that you were very concerned. I made a comment that the press conference today was somewhat ominous, and your response to that comment was what?
My response was that I think that because there is so much unknown at this time about this infectious disease as far as the spread, as far as the demographics of who it's infecting, that what they're doing, what CDC and WHO is doing, is they're providing a general blanket statement to please be careful and be very sincere about this particular infection.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Dai, we are running out of time for this segment. I'm wondering if you could stick by for a few more minutes. We have to break for a commercial, but I would like to get a few more specifics, if we can, about the research and how it's conducted and how the information is communicated around the scientific community. Can you stick with us a little bit longer?
Of course, sir.
That's Dr. John Dai. He is our special guest this evening. He's with the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases. That is at Fort Detrick, Maryland. And he's one of the top guys in the field on this particular subject. If you have questions, 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Joining us in the studio now, we welcome State Senator William Delgado. He is a Democrat from Chicago. He is also the chairman of the Illinois Public Health Committee. Patrick Brady also joins us. He is the Republican National Committeeman for the state of Illinois. And independent Chris Broyles joins us this evening. He is a consultant. And before we engage them in our conversation, I would like to go back to our guest, John Dai, and ask Dr. Dai, when you talk about the research, and by the way, I had the pleasure of meeting you a couple of months ago when you came in for a lecture at Columbia College in Chicago for their Human Nature seminar series that Dr. Kevin Fuller has been operating. And what I really enjoyed about speaking with you, Dr. Dai, was that you made very complicated, at least complicated scientific issues to me, very easy to understand. And you described the process of how you go to work each day and how you gather, scores and thousands of bits of information from all over the world to help you in your research. And I'm wondering if you can explain to the audience how you and other scientists go about obtaining and sharing the information that will hopefully find a cure for the swine flu?
That's a great question. So I guess with the World Wide Web and with the number of conferences that are going on, the actual scientific community is much smaller than you think. The number of people who are working on this virus is numerous. However, the communication between these people occurs on a daily, definitely a weekly, if not daily basis, especially when there is an outbreak such as this. There are the preeminent scientists from around the world that are trying to understand exactly what makes this particular virus different from other swine viruses, that it's been able to make this jump to humans and be so infectious and be able to be spread between humans. Now, what's important to know about a virus is it's not a living cell. It doesn't have any living parts. It's just a shell or a coat of proteins that contains genetic information. A virus can't live on its own. It has to actually come into contact and be and infect cells in your body, and in this case, it's your lung cells, because it's a respiratory virus. It enters those cells, and then it uses your normal cell machinery to make more copies of itself. All it's doing is trying to propagate its life. And it uses your normal cell machinery, and then it ruptures your cell and releases it. And the problem is that it's rupturing cells in your lungs that you need, and that's why people become sick when they become infected with this particular virus. So, like I said, there is lots of contact that's going on all the time between scientists around the world about this on a daily basis. And all information is shared on PubMed. We can get pre-copies of papers. And then I would say most scientists attend 3 to 4 national, if not international, symposia a year where lots of cutting-edge research and cutting-edge information is shared.
The one last question I'd like to at least get your opinion on, although you may not want to share it, and we'll then engage our guests in Chicago to get their reaction. You had the press conference today. It was somber when you're issuing a public health emergency. You would expect it. But this is a reaction to 81 deaths in Mexico, a large number, 20 cases in the United States, a relatively small number at this particular point. at this point in time, given the reaction of the CDC and the government, the administration, are they being either the government or the media, is anybody overreacting to this story at this moment in time?
At this point in time, my personal opinion, this is my personal opinion.
Yes.
At this point in time, I don't feel that there has been an overreaction. I think that as you see more cases emerge, I think the media will grab onto it and they will move this forward. However, I think it is important to realize that since 1918 and the pandemic flu, we've had multiple outbreaks of flu that have had different mortality rates, and it has occurred in 1956 and 1976 and seems to be almost every 30 years, which is kind of interesting, which someone should do a study on. And I believe that that there will be the right response by CDC and WHO to this particular infectious disease. So I believe they're doing everything they can at this time, and like I said, and Dr. Skinner said earlier, communication worldwide is the key to stem this infection.
Today at the press conference, there were a couple of reporter questions that wanted to know whether the president had been vaccinated, whether there was any possible connection to his recent trip to Mexico, and there have been already questions, one sent into this program via the Internet, suggesting or at least asking, is there any possibility that this could be any form of a biological, a terrorist attack. And I know that, when I mentioned that you work for the U.S. Army and you're at Fort Detrick, that's where certainly the investigations into anthrax took place. So I know you're involved in a lot of, very significant research there. But is there anything that you can say to the audience that would give them a sense of comfort that we're not likely to be walking down that road with this case based on what we know now?
Yes, I believe so. There is no scientific indication that this has been a biothreat, a biowarfare agent. This happens in nature. The flu virus, with its ability to mutate and its ability to change and its ability to have multiple hosts, this happens. So therefore, it is I truly believe that there is no biowarfare aspect to this particular outbreak.
And again, my final question to you is, because we may have people that have tuned in since I did my introduction to you, and that is the difference between this strain of flu and flu that perhaps people have had throughout their entire lives. Is there any difference and any final piece of advice you would give to those listening to the program to be as cautionary as possible?
Well, the symptoms are the same as your normal flu, and the only difference is that the proteins that are on the outside of this flu are slightly different than the proteins that are on the outside of the human flu. And the way your body recognizes what is not itself is by the immune system. And the immune system recognizes these foreign proteins. And these are slightly different than what we've seen before, so our body hasn't seen anything like this before. So therefore, that's why you don't have a natural immunity to this. Now, if I were to give advice, I would say the best thing to do is go on living your lives exactly as you have before. Wash your hands and sing the ABCs when you wash your hands to make sure you get everything clean. I would say cover when you cough and sneeze, which is just common politeness. Avoid your contact with your face, with your hands, because that's an easy way to spread germs. And if you're feeling a little sick, if you feel like you have the flu, it's probably best to stay at home from work or from school.
And also, we should remember that obviously we don't want to alarm people, but a reality is that notwithstanding, again, the relatively small number of cases that have been reported thus far in the wake of the situation in Mexico, 35,000 people die each year because of flu. So it is serious. It should be taken seriously. And Dr. John Dye, we thank you very much for joining us tonight and sharing your knowledge of this subject on Beyond the Beltway.
It's been a pleasure. pleasure, and I would love to talk to you again in the future.
Thank you. Dr. John Dye, U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Disease. Join us from Fort Diedrich, Maryland. Joining us around the table, as we mentioned, we have our guests, and I would like to ask you, Senator Delgado, although we're going to be talking with on more political issues in just a few moments, I mentioned you are the chairman of the Public Health Committee of the Illinois State Senate. What can you tell us about the communication that you've had today with some senior officials insofar as public health in the state of Illinois and what they are doing to respond to this?
Yes, thank you, first of all, Bruce, for inviting us out here this evening. What an interesting day, to say the least, in terms of getting knowledge and, regarding the swine flu. Once it came to my attention, of course, I was very curious as to our state government and was able to reach out to Dr. Arnold, who is actually the director of public health here in Illinois for the state of Illinois under the governor, who's on his way actually down to Springfield. And he's informed me and through the governor's office that they continue the coordination with IEMA, which is the Illinois Emergency Management Agency.
But no cases reported in Illinois.
No cases in Illinois reported. There were a couple of cases that they wanted to look at in northern Illinois, but nothing to put on the record here for alarming anyone. And right now, Illinois is doing the things they need to do. And as the doctor pointed out, communication to the local health clinics and to all the health professionals locally is the key, and communications is what we're doing.
Pat Brady, we're not looking at this as in a partisan way at this particular moment, but again, as a citizen, there was the press conference this afternoon. Is this, again, this is really sort of the first high visibility, perhaps major problem that the administration is facing? How are they doing so far?
I think they're doing fine so far, and we're wishing the best of luck, and our sympathy goes out to the folks in Mexico that succumbed to this swine flu, and this is all bad. And the good thing about the United States is we get behind the president when these things go on, and we push them the best, and at the state level too, Senator.
That's right.
Chris Broyles joins us. He is an independent. Your reaction, Chris?
You know, absolutely, as far as how Obama is doing in terms of handling this and from a press standpoint. You know, having a press conference, I think, was necessary. You know, the question came up as to whether or not it was an overreaction. I don't think it's an overreaction. I was going to mention as well the fact that the flu, with that many cases that are taken, just on a normal, what we consider the flu.
Right.
But something like this, where you realize that there are definitely some foreign influences as far as where people are traveling. You know, we're going into this, coming right out of the spring break type scenario. So I think it really could affect a lot of Americans. And so I appreciate certainly the coverage.
And it certainly raises it to a level of great concern when it's the Director of Homeland Security she's the top government officer looking into this. She's surrounded by the folks from CDC, but that sends a pretty strong signal that the administration is taking this very seriously. 1-800-723-8029. We'll have calls when we come back, and also we're going to be taking a look at the first 100 days of the Obama administration and all that debate over torture. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Myrtle Beach, where Zach is listening to us on WRNN. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Bruce. Love the show.
Thank you.
My question is really this. I keep on hearing the word pandemic being thrown around, but nothing has actually been said about possibly closing the borders, or at least restricting who can get across the border. I know we're long past the days of Ellis Island when they actually checked people for health problems before they entered the country, but I don't think it's such a bad idea to do that now.
I do believe that in the press conference today they did say that at least in the official border crossing, some medical questions are being asked. But obviously, it doesn't address those that are coming here illegally. Pandemic basically just means that it's on more than one continent. So
right.
At the moment, we're still dealing with North America.
And also, like I told the screener, I actually called the Department of Homeland Security night before last to ask if there was anyone I could speak to as far as why the borders have not been closed. All I hear is, you know, you need to wash your hands. Yet, you know, this all stemming from Mexico, if we closed the border, at least it would help. And the lady actually told me that if I called again to ask that question, that I would be reported, my phone would be blocked from ever calling Homeland Security, and then she threw in before she hung up on me that this call is recorded, sir. So I just, you know, I've never actually been, wasn't afraid of this whole situation until that happened. When the government, the whole government office that is supposed to be handling this, is telling me, a citizen, well, screw you, but we're going to do this. And we don't want to hear what you have to say.
Well, they heard what you had to say on the phone. They heard what you had to say on the radio. And now we're going to move on to Sylvia in Winnebago, Illinois, listening to us on our flagship station, WLS. Go ahead.
Doesn't that make you feel really secure that Janet's in charge of all this? And
well,
these people from the CDC, yeah, they've really got it covered, don't they? Well, here's, you know, they wait till after spring break when they knew that the big tourist season was over before Mexico tells us. I don't think that at all. I think they knew all along.
Well, let's get reaction to that. Again, there will be analysis. There will be controversy, as I mentioned. The Washington Post yesterday said that the United States was slow to learn, that Mexico was slow in giving this information.
That's laughable. Come on.
We're gonna let our guests
and
respond to that.
And who's working in the pork slaughterhouses here in the United States? What percent of those workers are illegal aliens from Mexico? They don't keep track of that.
William Delgado.
Yeah, but with all due respect, it's not a question of an undocumented alien, as you put it, an illegal alien giving a hog a flu. It's the vice versa. It's about what a swine, a hog, or a that's what swine flu is, giving it to someone else. And it's not, it's 81 people in Mexico, but I think it's about the traveling there and how they might have handled it. I mean, I'm sure they have international trade with other countries, and who knows wherever those hogs might have come from.
And
I don't think
that
they
were.
I want to pick up on the first part of your. We'll come back to this. I want to get everybody else's reaction. Chris, I mean, what about her point? And that is, Mexico knew about this. I mean, it's the Washington Post that says they were slow to respond to it. What about her point that maybe one of the reasons why they're slow is that it really would have hurt tourism?
I'm not going to take that leap. I don't think that's something that was a conspiratorial tourist.
Yeah, like the whole government of Mexico isn't totally corrupt. Come on.
I just think two things I've just heard between both Zach and now Sylvia is that it's all of a sudden this has turned into an immigration issue.
Right.
We're closing borders.
Issue.
And
right. Look who's working on the big hog factory farms. Look who's working in our hog slaughterhouses here. That's where the meat comes from that everybody's eating. That now they're saying, oh, it's so safe if it's handled properly. Well, how do we know?
But I think information, Sylvia, is coming out that the people in the states that have been impacted are people who have traveled to Mexico or not, and most of them are tourists. And until we can know better with numbers, we got to be a little careful with just throwing out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. A lot of them are just like you and I, who are just tourists who are visiting Cancun for the holidays, and who knows?
And we're the ones who got 1,300 Mexicans sick, not necessarily the other direction.
Yeah,
that hasn't even been determined.
And
yet.
That's a good point, Brian.
My only point with Sylvia, the point that I would like to make is our borders aren't secure. And if our borders were secure and we knew they were secure, you wouldn't even have to raise this point. I do think I don't agree on the conspiracy aspect of it, but I do agree we have a huge problem with the Mexican border. And this administration needs to get that border secure quickly because we have a war down there. And that begs the question here.
I think your point about tourism is not that far-fetched, though. I mean, we're talking about the slowness with which they reported it. They reported it to the Canadians before they reported it to the United States. And again, it would have – had this story broken 3 weeks ago, tourism would have been down. People, I'm sure, are canceling their trips to Mexico right now. Right now they're doing it. So I'm not so sure that's so far-fetched. Tom in Youngstown, listening to us on WKBN. You're on the air. Go ahead.
First of all, Bruce, I wonder how much of this is sensationalism more than substance, because the Mexican hygiene problem and their standard of living in terms of health is, as compared to the U.S., they're going to have deaths where we may not. Also, during the Ford administration, 1976, we had a swine flu epidemic. And, in fact, they had a vaccine that they were ramping up. Everybody was supposed to get it. It went out with a whimper. And then the second point I'd like to make is between the illegals coming across this border, the drug problem, the gang violence on the borders, the potential for terrorism, and now this, I think that's going to be our Achilles heel of the 21st century. We're going to have to find some way of raising the standard of living and government standards of Mexico up to that of the U.S. and Canada. I like your comments.
I can't possibly comment on it in 15 seconds, but I can promise you one thing. We're going to break. We're going to come back. It'll be one of our topics in the next hour. We've got some good guests. I'm sure they have differing opinions on that. We'll hear from them in the next hour. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. If you're listening to us on radio, our phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8289. And again, we're going to be looking at the first 100 days of the Obama administration, and also the controversy continues to grow about whether or not we should look into some of the policies of torture or alleged policies in the Bush administration, and we'll talk about that in hour number two as well. From Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, with occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Republican Pat Brady, Democrat William Delgado, and Independent Chris Broyles. Our program tonight, coming to you from our studios at the SiriusXM Studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's btb@museum.tv. btb@museum.tv. Chris Broyles is our independent. Chris, I want to ask you a question. There's been a lot said about the president's first 100 days. You were sort of born and bred in a Republican family, but you drank the Kool-Aid. You went with Obama.
Well, a Republican mother, a Democratic father, and Republican in-laws. So I think yes, absolutely.
So, but more Republican.
I'm a Republicrat.
After 100 days, are you happy with the vote you made?
Yes.
Why?
And the answer is yes. I mean, I'm certainly happy with the groundwork that Obama's laid in this pretty broad array. Going back, thinking about Roosevelt and Johnson and all the different sort of since Roosevelt, looking at the 100-day mark as being sort of a media benchmark, and looking at each of the things that you try to lay out. And I think it was 15 bills in 100 days that FDR had passed. And you look at Obama, what he's been able to pass, $787 billion stimulus plan, misnomer of stimulus notwithstanding, but a stimulus bill. A number of other factors, as well as laying out, I think, a pretty good plan as far as where he wants to go for the next 100 days.
Pat Brady, you are a Republican. You are probably less excited than perhaps Chris Broyles. When you look at the things that he has done thus far or accomplished thus far, what are the two or three things that offend you the most?
Well, the release of the memos this week and the way he's behaved with regard to this torture issue. You know, he ran as a candidate of change and we're going to do things differently in Washington. And I give them credit. These people are brilliant, David Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel's advisors. But I don't know where this release of the torture memo issue goes, where the, instructing the attorney general to investigate the Bush administration. I wish that the president Monday, and I think his better instincts are to do this, I wish he'd just issue a blanket immunity or blanket amnesty and move on. This is just not going to help the country. I think what he's doing here, I think, is really bad for the country in the long run.
William Delgado is our Democrat. You served with Barack Obama in the Illinois State Senate. You're a state senator. Your assessment of that first 100 days, and maybe respond to the big disappointment that Pat Brady responded.
Well, thanks. But just briefly, I was actually in the House of Representatives at the time when Barack was running. And then, of course, I moved over to the Senate and have served with him and worked on actually many projects with him. But again, talking to all we've been talking about is transparency and accountability and making sure that this country has a transparency and accountability. If that was their thinking going forward and intelligently assuming that releasing of information to the American public and making sure that Americans know that he is completely transparent is a good way of doing it in terms of national security, of course, I'm sure that a lot of thought went into that in terms of releasing that information. But that's the beautiful part of a democracy is that we're supposed to share this knowledge. And for heaven's sakes, we know that people have been able to stay in government, hide behind the scenes, and if there's been any kind of crimes committed, be it in this country or any other one, we would want to go after their heads. If it happened in any of our communities, someone did something wrong, they should be exposed.
One of the concerns, however, is whether or not what Barack Obama said last week is the same thing that he sort of said the week before. And let's go to the initial quote. This was when the CIA memos were released. He said, "This is a time for reflection, not retribution. I respect the strong views and emotions that these issues evoke. We have been through a dark and painful chapter in our history. But at a time of great challenges and disturbing disunity, nothing will be gained by spending our time and energy laying blame for the past." That was what he said about 10 days ago. Now, less than a week ago, this is what he had to say during a very brief White House press offering. And this is what the president had to say, offering a little different interpretation of what he intends to do.
With respect to those who formulated those legal decisions, I would say that that is going to be more of a decision for the Attorney General within the parameters of various laws.
Patrick Beatty, you are a former U.S. attorney. You worked for the state's attorney. I mean, the law is your thing, your reaction to this.
The laws he's talking about are Title 18 criminal laws. And I just don't understand the political or national security advantage to going forward with these investigations. I mean, we're going to turn us – it's going to be a banana republic. Let me finish. As soon as the next administration comes in, they're going to do the same thing. John McCain, who I think is the true expert on torture and how this should be handled, is the person most out in the front is saying, get beyond it. This does nothing good for the United States. In the long run, I don't think it does much for the Obama administration.
Chris Broyles.
Yeah, well, here's where I completely agree with Pat, and that is that, you know, the 100 days notwithstanding, this most recent thing I think is absolutely a flip-flop. And even Gibbs this morning seemed to, you know, comment on the consistency of Obama's message, and this is absolutely what you just read and what you just played. That's not consistent. And to turn it over to Holder and to turn it over to the Justice Department or this Truth Commission, I think it really is a Pandora's box. And the fact that you're going to all of a sudden everybody from Pelosi to Rockefeller to anybody else who is involved and once these meetings minutes. Once these minutes come out, that's where the truth is really going to come out.
And next week, the Pentagon is releasing thousands of pictures.
Well, right. And that's the thing. It is definitely a slippery slope, and I agree with Pat and my colleague Brian here in that aspect. But where do we find that middle? Where do we find that ability to know, to provide knowledge to the American public and make sure we're covering our bases, not to let, you know, corrupted people, not necessarily a system that's corrupted, but individuals who might have had bad intentions. But I agree, there is a slippery slope, and is this manageable? And I think.
But what were the bad intentions? Because one of the things that Dick Cheney has said, and Dick Cheney seems raring to go for another fight. I mean, George Bush may not want to bring this up, but what the vice president said in his Fox interview was, you know what? There are memos that suggest that these interrogation techniques resulted in information that stopped terrorist attacks. You know what? Let's release them, declassify them.
Right.
Do you object to that? Let's let the American people and guy from the Weekly Standard today on the Fox News show. He basically said the same thing. Let's have a discussion of this. If the Obama administration wants to do this and they want to focus on the past, let's talk about the past. And in that past, we'll find out that these interrogation techniques worked and they saved American lives.
And it was bipartisan.
And
that may be true. But going back to Pat's point, though, and we've seen this in other areas, is that but then it does become a political party fight. And then if the next administration, and before you know it, all we wind up having is investigation behind investigation, and we get away from the main goal.
So then why can't he put a lid on it?
I think at this...
Why doesn't he just say, you know, hey, call up Patrick Leahy and say, you know, we're not going there.
I think that at this point of just trying to isolate it, now sending it to the Attorney General side and sending it to Eric and letting Mr. Holder look at it at this point.
He could do the stop it Monday. Issue blanket amnesty, say it's over. Justice Department can't do anything. Next week we forget about it. Buy another dog and the media goes that way.
We got to move. 1-800-723-8029. Back Charlie from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We've got callers on the line. Let's go to Bob listening to us in Bloomington, Illinois on WLS. Go ahead. Oh, I guess you're not. How about John in Evanston? Go ahead. Are you there?
How you doing? I'm here, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I saw a show on Friday, Charlie Rose show. He had some outstanding people. The thing that really is of note is that they had the most coherent explanation as to how we can get out of this worldwide crisis, and it made sense. What they're saying is what we've got to do is we've got to convert the bondholders' debt to equity across the board in these big financial institutions such as Citibank, Bank of America, etc. If that is done, suddenly the only way that they're going to get paid is if they start making loans like crazy, and it will solve the problem of their balance sheet. This show is going to be repeated tomorrow in Chicago on Channel 20 between 5 and 6, but I think it's available at Charlie Rose's website. Uh-huh. Joe Stiglitz, the Nobel Prize winner of economics, is one of the people that was touting this as a solution.
Anybody want to comment on that? Chris Broyles, you have a comment on this?
Well, I mean, I think that's the big issue right now is that there's the money that, and if you talk about TARP and if you talk about the money that the banks have got, I think the big question right now is why the banks aren't loaning it out. And I think that's the big question is that it's still incredibly difficult to get a loan. And even though it seemed like there was a sort of a bright spot, Geithner sort of put that down earlier this week, where still saying that they were still struggling to make that.
Should the president be doing more to get that money out?
Yeah, absolutely. And what the president has failed to do, probably the follow-up to the first question is, I think they should have done early on, what are they going to do with these toxic assets? He's 100 days in. The Treasury Department spots aren't filled. Geithner still has not come out with a solution to the main problem, which is the toxic assets. I mean, if you go back to the 90s, they set up the Resolution Trust Corps. They got all these things put together, and then they cleaned it out. But we're 100 days into this, and he hasn't come up with a solution and hasn't even filled all the spots at the Treasury Department.
Should he be more aggressive with the banks like he's being aggressive with the automobile companies?
No, absolutely. Going on that same road in terms of the toxic assets, a lot of them are mortgages. And having to be able to focus on our home ownership with all of our nation in the same boat here, needing help and keeping their homes, it was a great opportunity to really help micromanage that. If we're going to get involved and make sure the banks, we're going to bail out these folks who already have money, then at least make sure we focus them and deal with those toxic assets, which indeed would have opened up a lot of ability to trust again and do some home loans, and let's keep people in their homes.
Yeah, well, and there's still a lot of, but the confidence has still grown. I mean, that's mm-hmm. I think, obvious. In the first 100 days, even if it hasn't been necessarily dictated exactly what's next, I mean, just going back to good old, economic theory here, especially he's armed with a lot of behavioral scientists. So this isn't just a matter of looking at it from, Friedman Keynes type debate as to, how you're doling out the money. It goes into specifically how you create an air of confidence among the people.
And
I think the confidence
beautiful
is there.
Part of it is that he's creating that infrastructure, Bruce, and that's exactly what I'm so proud of what Barack Obama's administration is doing and moving as quickly is creating the infrastructure and the behavior and the energy out there that says yes, it can be done. But in terms of what people see on the news every day and what the sensational cases that come out there in terms of how slow the beast banks are dealing with it, you're darn too, and America's going to be uncomfortable.
I want to go back to something we talked about in the first segment, and I want to follow up on what you suggested the Attorney General or the President on Monday could offer amnesty and once and for all the issue of whether or not there's going to be recriminations on past indiscretions by the Bush administration, whether we're going to deal with it or not. Why do you think he's trying to have it both ways, in my view? On one hand, he's saying, he's leaving the door open that there could be investigations because he wants to keep his left flank happy. But in reality, he doesn't really want to find those answers out.
I agree. And as much respect as I have for President Obama, former Senator Obama, I think his Achilles heel is he tries too much to please everybody. Some issues, there's just a right and wrong answer. And he blew like a reed in the wind on this issue, and it's going to end up hurting him. So either he comes back and corrects it quickly, or it's going to create problems downstream.
Porter Goss commented the other day, he said an epidemic case of amnesia is what he calls it in terms of what we all forget about where we were in 2001, 2002 as far as mentally and where we were as a country, where we were as an administration. And I think to go back now and the fact that who's whispering in President Obama's ear, I really think it is kind of a witch hunt. And I know that term has been used. And I think it's specifically going after Cheney and Rumsfeld.
Senator, in your view, you disagree with that. But the context that I want to get your response to, there have certainly been past discretions that this country has been involved with. All kinds of administrations, Republicans, Democrats. There's things that we put under the rug, and historians or the media have discovered some of those indiscretions, and they've shared them with the world, with the public. In most cases, it hasn't happened during a war. Does it make any difference to you that we will have at a time when we're engaged in two wars on two fronts, and we're trying to improve the image of the country? To remind them with photographs a week or 2 weeks after we've come out with memos explaining some of the things that we've done that at least some people think we're wrong. Not everybody.
Right.
Vice President Cheney doesn't think they're wrong.
Right, because they want to get into a political fight. They want to create this political debate and get all of our friends out here in America to get nervous and scared. I agree.
Who wants to get him?
Using your example of who would it be, if it's Cheney wanting to expose more and saying let it happen, if it's someone
Pat Leahy and
Mr. Leahy who wants to expose all of these things, I believe is create. I think answering your question is suggesting that I'd have a very big concern in terms of creating a scare in the sofa-sitting backpack and jewel shop and parent, the folks who are sitting at home every day working hard and saying, do we need this during a war? No. Do we need to have the truth put out in a timely manner? Absolutely. But at this time, it's getting too political. And what we have to do is we were hoping and continue to pray that Barack's people around him in Washington, he'll keep those politicians outside the loop and make sure that he makes the right decision.
But also, I want to ask you
a tough question.
I want to ask you a political question because many of the men and women who are in the military,
my brother-in-law included,
are Hispanic.
Yes, my brother-in-law.
And so military families, they may not want these investigations.
Yeah,
And
again, I would think that the right thing to do is to internally have an assessment done. I think it shouldn't be exposed to American public like cold water in your face tomorrow. I think we should be careful, just like in any case, it'd be a criminal case in a jury or anywhere else, is exactly how we let information out and be careful that we're not going to be injurious to our citizenry. But my brother-in-law serves in the Air Force at Patrick Air Force Base down in Florida and has been in Iraq more than two times. And to know that is exactly right. But to have some political courage and do the right thing and keep America educated and informed is the right thing. To scare them out of their wits, absolutely not. To politicize it, absolutely not.
Chris?
I'm not sure if cold water in the face is the best analogy, given the topic.
But no, 200 times.
That's right.
Hey, you survived it 200 times. How bad can it
that's
be?
That's right, exactly. One of the things I think that came up that is sort of chilling is the fact there are many officials and many people in the military and armed services that believe that part of the influx of a lot of the violence and outbreak of violence in the Middle East was actually a result of the torture the enhanced interrogation techniques that we chose to do because we don't torture. But the enhanced interrogation techniques, a lot of the violence was created as a result of that. And to say that we're going to continue to now go back and bring it up again, including pictures, I mean, after the whole Abu Ghraib, you know, pictures which are embedded in your mind forever. I mean, just saying that, you know exactly which pictures I'm talking about.
Right.
We're going to have a whole new set of those in our minds now for the next, you know, however long once those things come out.
I think, too, it kills the morale at the CIA. I mean, if you're undercover agent or you're doing work like this legally, you don't know if you're next. I mean, this is based on interpretations of lawyers at the Justice Department. I mean, if we started investigating lawyers for bad opinions.
But then he goes to the CIA and he says – he tells everybody what a wonderful job they are.
Well,
and they're not going to focus on them. You know, they may if a holder says that they're going to look at the people who wrote it. It clearly – I mean, it is so – the other thing about it that concerns me is that if indeed you wanted to go to Washington to change the culture, the way you change the culture is, you know what, we're not going to do this. Maybe we should have recriminations. Maybe we've done this way in the past. But you know what? The door is closed. We're not going there, period. You don't like it? Scream and yell. But you know what? We're not going there. That would change the climate. But it seems to me that he wants it both ways.
Right, and he didn't do that. Exactly right. And that's the political tenure on this one. I don't know why.
Let's go to Ron in St. Joseph, Michigan, listening to us on WLS. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. Go ahead.
Good morning. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
First of all, there is no bipartisanship to destroy. Okay, the Republicans are not on board about any of the help of the this administration. So don't worry about hurting anybody's feelings. Okay.
Okay.
Number two, Obama's hand is forced on the issue. If he does not investigate and prosecute the Spanish judge who put Peniche in jail and who has Kissinger on U.S. lockdown for war crimes in Chile, will prosecute. So we have no recourse. We must investigate. And I'll put it in a historical perspective. If we had investigated and put on trial after the Civil War, Jefferson Davis for treason, Robert E. Lee for breaking his oath and treason, if we had put on trial Nathan Bedford for murdering war crimes, murdering black Union soldiers and white officers, you would not have had the Ku Klux Klan. If we do not investigate and prosecute, this process of criminality go on.
Your response, Pat, to that?
As a former prosecutor, I don't know what the charges are going to be. Are you going to charge people for writing bad legal memos? I mean, we would have 30,000 indictments a year for all the bad legal memos that go out there. I don't know. Are you going to prove specific intent to draft bad legal memos? I don't even see where it would be historic in its proportion.
Well, I think we've got to pause. 1-800-723-8289. More calls when we come back from Chicago. From Fresno, California to Knoxville, Tennessee, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. Our Democrat tonight is William Delgado. He is an Illinois state senator. He's the chairman of the Public Health Committee, now in his 11th year serving in Springfield, both as a member of the Senate and the House. Patrick Brady is also here. He is the Republican National Committeeman for the state of Illinois. She's charged with rebuilding the Republican Party in the state, relatively new to the job, and also a former assistant United States attorney, and also worked in the state's attorney's office in Cook County, and also you're now engaged in rooting out white-collar crime.
Yep.
That's not part of your role with the Republican National Committee. Those are two separate jobs.
I hope.
And Chris Broyles is with us. He is a consultant. And for those of you listening to us on WNOX in Knoxville, Tennessee, listen to this. You're going to fall off your chair when I tell you this. Once upon a time, between 1991 and 1995, when you went to the University of Tennessee, you were Rocky Top.
I was Smokey. Yes,
Smokey. You were Smoking.
I was.
You heard Rocky Top.
I sung Rocky Top
one or two times.
Yeah.
Will you sing it for us before we go off the air?
We'll see. It depends.
1-800-723-8289. I realize we have a lot of listeners listening to us on WNOX, and so one of your favorite sons from years ago. And you were there when Peyton Manning was there, right?
Yeah, Shuler. He was a friend of yours. Congressman Shuler, and also Peyton Manning.
So very good. Peyton Manning. Let's go to KLBJ, Yoakum, Texas, where Les is listening to us in Texas tonight. Nice to hear from Texas, Les. Go ahead.
You guys are fiddling while Rome burns. The Obama administration and its audacity to do what they have done is ridiculous. How do you deal with people who are willing to blow themselves up? It's insane. You fake drown them. Big deal.
William Delgado, let's let you respond.
Wow, well, no. I mean, answering his question, first of all, how do you deal with someone who wants to blow themselves up? I would say very carefully. But on a serious note, Bruce, it's a matter of trying to do the right thing and utilizing our investigative arms the best way we can, and knowing that we're in a day here where we're finally facing an America. How do we confront it when we're being accused of doing something that we reacted to? And that was, first of all the way back to the Iraq War. Why were we there? What happened?
Was the Perlman video not enough?
Any video is enough, and I'm not going to defend. But in terms of how we go about making two rights as a wrong and taking it out is another way. America is a great country because it knows how to. We have the greatest army and the greatest armed forces in the world. We don't have to go that route.
You know, one of the Les, let me tackle your answer, then I'll let the other guests respond as well. One of the things that, you know, as much as I would prefer that we do not focus on the past, there's a piece of me who agrees with what Dick Cheney has said, and that is, if there's memos out there that can be declassified and no one's going to get hurt by them, and they're going to show once and for all that interrogation techniques stopped terrorist attacks on the United States, maybe, just maybe, they will shut some liberals up. Just maybe. And one of the reasons why I would maybe like to see this is maybe it's time for them to be shown that maybe there was these techniques. We don't like them. We would prefer that they not happen. But the other thing that happened is there are Democratic members of Congress, significant members of Congress, including the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. This was before she was Speaker. She was aware, and many Democrats were aware of these techniques. They said nothing. Why did they say nothing? Because they knew that if they stood up and said anything publicly about it, their constituents back home would go after them.
Shut them down.
That's right. Because they did what was a popular thing to do. It was a popular thing to go after people who had just slaughtered 3,000 Americans. And anybody years later, we're going to play Monday morning quarterback, and we're going to try to make them look like somehow the Bush administration and Cheney and Rumsfeld were worse than anybody else. What they did was they kept the United States from being attacked again. We should say thank you for that.
And then I'll get off the radio. This is dirty politics. The people who were waterboarded got up and walked away. They're now being freed from Guantanamo to be sent God knows where to do God knows what. And that's my statement. Thank you.
No, Bruce, and I just want to say it's a matter of did they do it unilaterally or did they do it within this process? And that's all. And that would be the only argument I would make, is that certain allegations on terms of how Bush handled this was too unilateral versus going around their legislature, around the Congress, around the Senate. And that's the argument I would make versus doing it within a controlled pattern of the CIA and the National Security Agency.
Pat Brady.
One thing that I think that hasn't come up in this discussion or anything I've heard today, we have problems in Pakistan right now. We had a terrible week in Iraq last week. Afghanistan right now is a mess. These distractions from what need to be taken care of now are what happened when you look backward. The president needs to look forward. I mean, there are some big issues on the plate right now, and we don't need to be talking about what happened 6 years ago.
Now, and I think that in terms of like talking about Pakistan, talking about Afghanistan, one of the things I think everybody on both sides of the political coin, both left and right, wanted to know is how is he going to react? Just like any president, how is he going to react under a military situation? So the Navy SEALs calling them out in terms of rescuing Phillips from the hostage situation, the drones in Pakistan, the release of additional troops to Afghanistan. He's certainly shown that he's not backing away from the military.
No, he's President Bush too. He hasn't changed any of those points. Iraq, Afghanistan, or Pakistan, he's pretty much adopted the Bush approach to foreign policy other than the apology tour and the apology, the handshake with
Bush. I think everyone's arguing more timing of things, I think, is what we're all trying to agree or disagree on around America is the timing of all this, exactly, in terms of what should we release. Is it going to help us or hurt us? At the end of the day, we need to fix an economy. We need to make sure our men and women are safe across all these borders you just mentioned. At the end of the day, though, he needs to make sure the leadership is intact, and that if there's anything that was done wrong, that either he, with all the technology, either it comes out Or if it was 50 years ago, maybe the person on the corner wouldn't know about it when they get their newspaper. But at the end of the day, I think we're doing a lot of arguing about timing. And I agree in terms of moving forward. And the first thing is, let's get America back to work. And I think that'll solve a lot of its problems.
Let's go to John and Joliet, listening to us on WLS. You're on the air.
Hi, gentlemen. Good evening. Glad to speak with you. My comments, I'll try and keep them real simple. The first one, you guys all hit it on the head. With regards to the economy, until this administration can value the toxic assets and clear them off the books and give them come up with whatever formula you want so they're workable, the economy goes nowhere. Absolutely nowhere, because it's anywhere from $2 trillion to $10 trillion, depending on the valuation that has to be determined by Mr. Geithner. Secondly, you know, to go on something where we all don't agree, if we look backwards to 6 years ago and try to, so like you guys said, Monday morning quarterback this stuff, the only thing we do is guarantee another terrorist attack against this country. If this president sticks to his word and wants to look forward and unite and step forward, then what's done is done. Water under the bridge is over. And with Pakistan teetering on the end with 40 to 60 nukes, who's gonna say that waterboarding is too extreme when you got a 30 kiloton mushroom cloud over Kansas City? No. Thanks, and I'll listen to you guys.
Bye. All right. Pat, you're going to respond to that?
No, I agree with what he said, and I think that we need to look forward.
Let's go to Bob in Bloomington, Illinois on WLS. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me. My comment is... Hello?
Hello, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. My comment is this. You know, 2 weeks ago, we put a bullet in the head of three pirates. These were on orders okayed by the White House. And this was for the capture of an American to save that one American life. Yet after 9/11, after almost 3,100 Americans killed in one day, what moral footing does the Obama administration have to discuss and investigate and potentially prosecute waterboarding? And, you know, we had a gentleman, I guess, who went through waterboarding 188 times and survived. As far as I know, there's no permanent disability. I'm sure he's scared out of his life. But the reality is, compare the two. Here after 9/11, after so many deaths, and we're worried about something else, and potentially, if you believe Dick Cheney, we saved some lives with the Brooklyn Bridge prevention, a bombing, or whatever. Where does the Obama administration come off when he's got three pirate deaths on his hands for the saving of one person?
Bill Delgado.
Yeah, well, again, I would just point out that I think America is just being faced with a lot of information out there. And there were a lot of tactics possibly used in the Vietnam War and World War II that we didn't know about as Americans going to work every day. And now we know. But again, we have the right places in place, tribunals, executive branches to try to deal with these kind of things. And America has a process called democracy, and we can't shy away with that. And we don't have to. And we have a strong armed forces. I think it's just a matter of how we're handling things in the public and who's to say this wasn't going on.
The other point is that that everybody knows this. Everybody knows that this happened.
Exactly.
Who was surprised by this?
Exactly.
What is to be gained by this?
Nothing.
Is there's other than to make some liberals get their jollies off? Other than that, who cares?
They're going to vote for him anyway. That's what I understand.
Right. That's right.
We investigate Obama for murdering these three pirates.
Maybe if there's ever a Republican, they want to know whether they read these guys their Miranda rights. And you know what? They didn't. 1-800-723-8289. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for being with us. Before we go back to calls, let me remind you of a special benefit coming up on May 16th for the Museum of Broadcast Communications. It is a salute to Warner Saunders, the NBC anchor, retiring after 40 years, 6 o'clock on May 16th. Tickets are $350. It is a benefit. It'll be your opportunity to say farewell to one of the leading broadcasters and also a civic leader long before it was But long before he was a broadcaster, a man from the streets who moved to the anchor table. And if you'd like more information, museum.tv is where you can buy tickets. Again, it's a benefit for the Museum of Broadcast Communications. And Warner's recovering from some recent surgery, and he's told me that he'll be there. He won't be necessarily on the dance floor, although you can be on the dance floor. Herb Kent is going to be providing the music, so it'll be a fun time on the 16th of May at the Fairmont Hotel. Let's go back to calls. Let's go to Pete. Listening to us in Central Illinois on WPRW. Go ahead.
Yes. This evening I just thought I would mention that, you know, everybody's talked about wanting to be transparent. Well, transparency is a wonderful idea. However, if you really look at justice, the eyes of justice are supposed to be blind. So having been that being said, if it's supposed to be blind, then you either have to come out forward with all the information or none of the information. And I'd like to hear what you have to say about that.
Patrick, what about it?
Well, that's where they made their big mistake. They came out with half of it, and like Dick Cheney rightfully pointed out, let's see the other half of it. But again, I can go back to what I've been saying all along. Why open the can of worms? And all these questions come up now, and you're going to turn it over to the Justice Department, and that's going to be a big train wreck.
But from a political standpoint, Patrick, you say you don't want it out. But again, what if the vice president got his way? And all of the memos came out, and those memos showed that on such and such a date, someone was interrogated, they provided information, and a terrorist attack was thwarted. Wouldn't that be good for conservatives and Republicans and hard edge military types?
Oh, absolutely. It would be.
So there could be a political benefit. This is something that really could explode in their face.
I do. And the thing is, and I mean this sincerely, this is beyond politics. We're talking national security now. And this was a big mistake from the get-go. And if they do bring everything out, great. It looks good for the Republicans. That's good for my party. But all in all, it's bad for the country.
Let's go to Rich in Sacramento, California, listening to us on KTKZ. Go ahead. Nice to hear from California. Nope, I guess you're not there. How about Freddie in Austin, Texas on KLBJ?
Hey, you know, so I keep thinking of what I'm going to say, and I keep listening to this conversation. It really sounds like the people that are really afraid, or they just don't want it to go out, they don't want to open a can of worms, like it's a bunch of little children, and they're scared to get in trouble. I mean, it's ridiculous, and I fully support Obama. I think he should go all the way and expose all of this stuff, and that would be a refreshing change. I mean, there are people around this world that hate this nation because we're so hypocritical. We point the finger at other nations for doing the very things that we do, and then when it starts to come out that we've actually done those things, we all run and hide and cry. I mean, it's ridiculous, and I hope that he keeps going. I mean, that would be a change. You're saying it wouldn't be a change, but it actually would be a change. I think all of those people from that administration, Bush and his friends.
Freddie, are you open up? Are you open to the possibility? Can you, now that we're talking to each other on live radio, are you open up to the possibility that if we had an investigation like this, a truth commission, and Dick Cheney had a chance to present his case, you might be able to convince that you're alive today, maybe Austin, Texas is still on the face of the map today because a terrorist attack aimed at Austin, Texas was thwarted because of these terror techniques. Is that a possibility?
I'm open to all that possibility, absolutely.
Good.
But, you know, it's funny that you guys will say, that people are saying, well, you know, what good is it going to do? And that's, you know, turn the page, let's look forward. You know, that doesn't work for any other type of criminal except a politician. If I rob a bank, the police aren't going to go, oh, you know, that was yesterday. We need to be looking forward. And we're not talking about robbing banks. We're talking about something much deeper and worse than that. We're talking about violating the Geneva Convention and breaking world laws. These people need to be held responsible. And if it comes out that they shouldn't be held responsible, then justice would serve, and that's fine. But I think it's ridiculous to say we should turn the page and look forward and not look backwards.
And you say this. I want to ask Patrick your response to Freddie's point of view.
I think it's naive, and I think that the president needs to act like the president and act in the best interest of the country. And this is nothing more than a liberal. You know, this is a dream of a far left to have this happen, and it's not good for our country. I don't think any national security expert we've heard in the last week thinks it is good for the country.
But if it's
in
not,
what way is it bad?
In what way is it bad? Do you really think, and I think Chris made the point earlier, if we go through a complete witch hunt type truth commission investigation led by partisan people in the Congress, controlled by the Democrats, exposing this, putting pictures out there, telling the whole world how the Central Intelligence Agency operates, the intelligence branch of our country, the intelligence we need to keep this country safe. All that's going to be aired in the public, in the international arena.
But
how does that help protect our national security?
But we can survive. We can survive as a nation.
Of course.
Sure.
We survive the Church Committee commissions.
Certainly. But we weaken our intelligence community, and after the hearings, after 9/11, we learned how weak our intelligence gathering capabilities had become, and this just does nothing but feed that.
Chris?
And part of what keeps me independent, honestly, are partisan issues just like this. Because, you know, for 8 years, I listened to the far left talk about what an evil, evil human being George Bush was and everybody associated with George Bush. Now here we're going to go into the next 4 to 8 years of talking about what an evil person Obama is and how it's terrible and how the entire world is going
apart. That's where it becomes political.
And it is. And you know what? This is a political issue. And I think – I don't know why Barack Obama let himself get sucked into this after making what I thought was a very good statement, completely turning it on its ear earlier this week and going down a road that is going to result in nothing but a complete partisan debate and discussion that is
going to result. And that's the challenge of not letting that happen, because if not, then the scales of justice does peak sometimes. And if you just look at our prison systems in this nation, the scales of justice is blindfolded. It does peak, and we do have a selective form of justice at times.
We got to pause on that. Senator Bill Delgado, thank you very much for joining us. Chris Broyles, thank you very much for being with us. Our independent Patrick Brady, thank you very much.
Thank
the Republican
you.
National Committeeman for the state of Illinois, and also he's going after white-collar crime again, not the same, not using the same party. He goes after the Democrats. The Democrats of white-collar crime. This program is a Genevieve production, produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Ben Stewart for their assistance in the production of this program. And don't forget, if you missed the first part of our program, wash your hands. If you feel like you've got the flu, stay home. Don't spread it. I'm Bruce Dumont. See you next Sunday night.